Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. You can find more podcasts like this by visiting www.educause.edu/podcasts or subscribe to our iTunes feed by searching for EDUCAUSE. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference presented by David Ernst, Director of Academic and Information Technology within the College of Education and Human Development at the University of Minnesota. The session is entitled Moving Video Beyond Content Delivery, a tool for annotating online video session details.
Hello and welcome to Moving Video Beyond Content Delivery, a tool for annotating online video. My name is Will Monroe. I'm the Head of Instructional Technology at the LSU Law Center, and I'm introducing our speaker today, David Ernst, who's the Director of Academic and Information Technology at the College of Education and Human Development at the University of Minnesota. Brad Hosack, the media developer for this project, was not able to be here today, and I'd just like to let you all know that there will be audio recordings made available near the registration desk when this is finished. David?
Okay. How are we doing? Bit of a buzz, huh? Maybe I'll trap myself behind the podium instead, I guess. Well, welcome. I understand it's nice outside, so I appreciate the... And I'm from Minnesota, so it means a lot that you're here. And so, and I'm here today to talk about a tool that we delivered in the College of Education and Human Development at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I'm the Director of Academic and Information Technologies there. This stems from an idea I had probably 3 years ago, and just luckily about 2 years ago we had hired someone who had the skills to do it, and that's Brad. And again, unfortunately, he couldn't be here today. We're starting to feel the budget issues most of us are probably going to feel here pretty soon, and only one of us could come. So I'm going to talk today about this, and the term I'm going to keep using, which is Video Ant, A-N-T, Video Ant. And this is a tool, this is the title that Brad gave it. He got tired of calling it the Video Annotation Tool and just eventually kind of slurred it into Video Ant, and it stuck. So that's what it's short for. It's video annotation. And what I'm going to do today is just briefly, I want to spend most of the time showing you the tool. I was telling Will beforehand, I don't know if I have enough to say for 50 minutes, because this is such a simple tool. It's got one button on it, basically. We can spend 20 minutes on that button if you want to. But anyway, what I'd like to do is show you explain to you just briefly why we did this, what was the whole point of it, but then spend most of the time playing with the tool and looking at what it can do, what we want it to do, and show you some good examples, I think, of how instructors have been using this tool in their class. So really briefly, this isn't anything I don't think that anyone here probably doesn't know, but I mean, has anyone else noticed in the last 4 to 5 years, I mean, just the amount of video, the demand for video production has just skyrocketed. And we've seen that especially in the academic area, and especially in the teaching and learning, and wanting to use video for lots of different reasons. Some of them right here. And then within probably the last, 2 to 3 years, the push has really been more towards getting the video on the internet for lots of good reasons. The tool we're talking about today is an internet-based, it's a web-based tool, which works really well because that's where everyone wants to put their video nowadays. YouTube is a good example of this growth. But also within our institutions, I think it's the same thing because of these reasons, because it's a lot easier to distribute than burning a CD or a DVD for everything. Easier to distribute, and everything's just getting easier to do, from compression and processing. The bandwidth issues with compression are improving. There's not that big concern as much of a concern anymore about which students won't be able to see this video, won't be able to handle it. And lots of instructors wanting to use it even for their face-to-face classes. They're telling their students, go look at this video online between classes. And then we also, we in our college have had, we have 80 to 100 online courses in our college, huge number, and more people, again, are wanting to use video as the content delivery. And so I'm going to talk about the reasons we developed this, and mainly two reasons. Two things that kind of came up, that fell together, that we thought this tool might be able to solve. The first case isn't really a case, but it's a series of courses that came up that our team, the team that I direct, was asked to put online. And the instructors who wanted to put these courses online felt that let's use video as the content delivery. And they also, and this is my own words here, obviously, but they're also kind of, I thought, were implying that they also, that was also the instruction. And if you have an education background, you know that there's a difference between content or curriculum and instruction. Content or curriculum is the stuff. The instruction is how you get it across. How do you teach? And so doing what I'm doing right now, which is lecturing, works very well. It's very efficient. But there are better ways of doing it as well that that I'll talk about here in a minute. So we'll talk about those. But we always in our shop try to work with the faculty to say, can we do better instructionally? Okay, so, all right. And then there also was one instructor who teaches a face-to-face speech course. And she also, she has used videos for years, set up a VHS recorder in the back of the room, recorded the student's speeches, and used that as an assessment. Use the tapes to assess the students. So we'll talk about that. So here's the case number one. Again, the issue is sometimes instructors were simply uploading video to the course management system and saying, that's an online course. You know, they'll record themselves lecturing, or they'll have some commercial, or a variety of things. It's a good start. It's a great start, possibly. Okay. But we always try to say, can we do better? Can we do more? Can we engage the students a little bit more? And it was always a battle with our instructional designer. And she got very frustrated sometimes where she'd come to me and say, I don't want anything to do with this course. I don't want my name attached to it because it's just, you know, the students are going to hate it and blah, 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 blah. And so we had to think of how do we encourage faculty, instructors, to try to engage their students in the video that they're uploading. So what are the goals then? The instructional designer is always pushing towards, if you've seen these before, the seven principles of good practice of undergraduate education, Chickering and Gamson. And these three specifically, basically it's engaging students with faculty, engaging students with each other, and engaging students with content. And engaging, kind of the term there, I think, for us at least implies active, that you're actively involved in it somehow. Here is Moore's model also. This is specific to distance education, basically saying the same thing. Students need to be actively involved with each other, or with the instructor, or with the content. Okay. All right, case number two. Face-to-face speech course by Dr. Jill Trites. And I will today show you some examples of how she's used this tool to improve what she did, what she does. She's using it right now. She tells the stories about how she would go home at the end of a speech with a paper bag full of VHS tapes and haul them home on the bus. And I don't know why, but if she said the bus driver always gave her a hard time while she's hauling so much, hauling all this stuff onto his bus. But and then she would sit there at home, go through each one, write up a summative, just a paragraph, whatever, saying, nice job. You maybe said, 16 times, and you looked at your shoes, and tried to give some sort of assessment to the performance of the speech. She came to us and said, you know what, it's just not even possible for me, just logistically, for them to even see their own recording. I mean, it's just too hard. You got to distribute them and get them back, and you know. And she wanted them to review themselves, do a little reflective learning. She wanted them to do peer reviews as well, to reflect each other, because, again, from learning theory, going back to the overused Bloom's taxonomy, if you give a speech, you're basically applying what you know about giving a speech. And she basically was arguing that if you can take the time to actually use that knowledge to assess or evaluate or analyze someone else's or your own, or that is even asking you to do more, you're a little more critical thinking about what you're doing. Okay, so those are the two reasons, and I'll show you how this tool, they seem like very different reasons, but they ended up not, that this tool really can do both. And actually, the odd thing is about this tool is that we've been surprised that everyone we show it to says, oh, I could use it for this, and they get all excited about it, and it's nothing at all related to the reason we designed it. And so we're finding that it's so simple. Like I said, it's got like one button on it. It's so simple that it seems to apply to a lot of things, which is really odd with technology. Usually people try to apply, and it's good at it. Usually people try to apply technologies to things it shouldn't, and it doesn't work very well, and it dies off. And this is something that seems to be able to be applied to several things. I want to talk a little bit about the structure of VideoAnt and how it works. VideoAnt is not a YouTube. It's not. There's no one uploading videos to the system at all. I don't want to get in that business. Trust me. I don't want to be storing videos. I don't want to be dealing with that. There are plenty of other places that do. In our College of Liberal Arts, they actually created a system. I'll show you here really, really briefly a little bit later. That does exactly that. You can upload videos and store it, and it makes derivatives and of different compressions. And I didn't want to duplicate that. I also wanted to make it as simple to use as we possibly could. And so the way that we have this structured, and this is, I'm sorry for this kind of elementary diagram, but this is really how simple as it is. You have a video out on the internet, and that's the key. You have a video on the internet. That's all you need, anywhere on the internet, as long as it's publicly available. Okay? And it has to be a couple of different compression schemes, which we can talk about later, but that's hopefully improving here too. That's not us, that's Adobe Flash that has that limitation, but a couple different compression schemes. It pulls in live the video when you're watching it and when you're annotating it, and so the video in that little, that's the interface up there, VideoAnt. The video up there is being streamed or being pulled in from elsewhere, somewhere on the internet, wherever you put the video. The annotations are what we store. We have a video, the database. It's really, really simple little database. All it has is the information in the annotation, which is like the time, the URL of the video that it's attached to, some ID, and the annotation itself. So it's a tiny, tiny, simple thing. This tool is open and available for anyone to use. The reason for that is because the overhead that we have is practically nothing. Again, we're just storing a few little text fields, and that's it. So if everyone in the room here used it, we probably wouldn't even notice or care, which is why it's open. So, okay. So I'll show it to you now. I want to mention that it was mentioned in 2008 Horizon Report by the New Media Consortium as what was the term? I forget the homegrown video. I think that was the grassroots video. Thank you. Grassroots video, and as kind of a, you know, the whole, if you haven't seen the Horizon report, it's interesting reading, not just because we're in it, but it's interesting reading. They're trying to basically look at technologies that they think are on the horizon, right, of making a difference. So, okay, I'm going to break out of this. Oh, PowerPoint just crashed. I preloaded lots of videos here, and this little computer, we'll see how it handles it. I just lost PowerPoint. Lots of memory going on here. Okay, so the first thing I think I'm going to do is show you an example. An example that was created by Jill Trites in her speech class. These are live examples, so I'm not going to manipulate them at all, but it will manipulate some later. I don't want to mess up what the students did, but we did get permission for me to use them here to show you, because there's nothing like a real example of what students are doing. So here's the interface, and Katie, is that her name? Okay, Katie giving her speech.
Gift that keeps on giving. Every day I'm amazed at what I can do and all the opportunities that come my way because I can breathe.
No.
This is a quote from Isabel Stenzel, who is the recipient of a lung transplant from an organ donor.
What we're looking
There's
at
no
then
greater gift
is,
you can give to someone than the gift of life.
Obviously the video in the upper left, the annotations in the upper right, and along the bottom is a timeline.
Pledging to give your organs after
the timeline has a few pins stuck in it. If you can see the pins along the timeline, along the bottom.
Nine of you said that you would be very likely to donate your organs. Well, five of you said that you would be somewhat likely to become an organ donor. It's great that so many of you agree that organ donation is important.
And
even more wonderful
you can see what happens
it.
After the you can see the playhead is the blue.
Of what it does for others.
And
today I'd like to persuade you further that becoming an
organ donor
the blue is something
passes
you do
one of those pins, you can
it,
should be able to see up in the annotation section, it will highlight that annotation. So it kind of tracks it as the video goes through.
There is an enormous
we'll get to one here in a second.
As there is a shortage of organs for those that are waiting on the transplant list. The number of people in the United States waiting for organs is staggering, and the data that I'm about to give you will make that shortage clear. On April 18th, I checked the National Registry of people on the organ
donation. Okay, so just scroll to that second annotation. They don't have a lot of annotations on this one. This is a pretty simple one.
This is according to the organ procurement.
You can see that.
I figured that number would change, so again, I checked it a few days ago, and on May 4th, just 2 days ago.
You can see that what Jill did is she has a protocol that she uses with her students, and she asks them to put their initials before the annotations. So you can see that it says CM, and apparently Katie spells her name with a C, because that's Katie's self-assessment, I think. Wait a minute. No, it isn't. Sorry, this is her peer review. So you can, I don't know if you can, probably can't see some of those in the back, but it says things like, your eye contact is amazing, you keep great eye contact with the audience, you seem to be moving more often and seem more comfortable, good body movements, and so on. And so this peer assessor put her initials down, a kind of a little title, and her comments. Now you can also then, if you see a comment for us, Katie says, what? You know, what she mean? I paused. I didn't pause, and she wants to jump right to that point in the video. She can just click on that comment. It'll jump to that pin, to that little, that annotation, and that part in the video. She can play it and see where she paused.
Times, Reg Green describes the first meeting with his recipients. We first met our recipients in there.
It was probably right before that, but and you can scrub this as well. I mean, you can sit and grab the playhead and move it around. So she could just back up a little bit and play it and see where she paused.
And because of his donation, she was able to start a family. That's her picture with her.
Let's try another one. This one is a little bit more complex in that it has three different people assessing it. I mean, it's the same thing. Like I said, it's as simple as can be. It's not really any more complex. But there are three people assessed it. You can see three different initials on the annotations. There was a self-assessment, a peer assessment, and then the instructor. That's the JT. That's Jill Trites, who did the assessments. So there are a lot more of them down here. And but the same thing. So three different people logged into the system at three different times.
The U of M Rec Center opened in 1993 and is located here on the east bank of campus.
I'm going to scroll it back here a second.
Memberships and programs of the Department of Recreational Sports are easily available to the university students to help inform and encourage an active and healthy lifestyle. I will briefly discuss the main facilities, memberships, and fun and exciting programs that the department has to offer. Let's start out by covering the four main facilities. The U of M Rec Center opened in 1990.
So this really transformed what Jill does. It went from, again, VHS tapes, students never saw them. She gave a paragraph assessment at the end saying you paused 16 times, or you said, here, or whatever. But she couldn't, number one, she couldn't point out exactly where they did something. Okay? That was, like, priceless. I mean, there are so many people so excited about it. We have lots of groups on campus excited about that. The American Sign Language, you can see how they would want to use that. The teachers, teacher education folks who want to use it in their with their student teachers in classrooms. Anything performance-related, right? Anything you performance that you can record, and then you want to if you want to point out anything along the timeline that's any kind of performance issues or items. Okay, let me see here. I think that's all of her examples. I'll show you for now. So let's just make one. Let's just make one from scratch and show you how simple it is. Oh, go ahead. Yes. Right now, the instructor is.
So that has
that. Has not eliminated that, and I. It is. We can talk. I'll talk about the process a little bit later too. But yes, it is, and that's the hardest part of the process by far. And I don't know any way around that except if you can capture it, stream it live somehow onto the server. She's made it. It's been made easier by this Media Mill, which is again this it's a web application that our College of Liberal Arts made. She simply drags it to a little widget on her desktop. The video that she gets from her camera, it uploads it, and she has it. She can log on to that and tell it I want it in this format. She does do that. She does that, drags the videos on her desktop, drags all of those onto this widget, which uploads it to this Media Mill, which I'll show you. And so we're trying to streamline the process, but right now we're not seeing a really great way. And if people have ideas about that, to avoid that. Yes?
You said protocol. So does the instructor in advance figure out what the rubric is, the vocal, and does the pause,
etc.? That's a good question, and that's something that, you can't do a peer review or a self-review unless you know what the criteria are. Hopefully, however, you know what the criteria are before you even give a speech so that you know how you're going to be judged. So I don't think that's really changed at all. Those criteria should have been clear from day one, no matter what technology, even if she wasn't recording it at all. Well, there isn't a rubric or template. There's just this. There's just... Go ahead. No. Nope, it's wide open. Yep, you can say anything you want in it.
And the last question is, are her instructor comments visible to all
students? No.
Everyone sees everything?
Yes. Everyone sees everything. And... that is a strength and weakness, and we went round and round about that. I originally came into this with the philosophy of let's make this as open as we can be. We want this to be kind of this, I guess we wanted, our original vision was much bigger than this, where people were going to have their own library of these things, and they were going to be sharing it with people and all of this. We're not there, and I don't know if we're ever going to get there or not. But so we decided to leave it as open as possible. There's no security. There's no authentication other than what we're calling authentication, security by obscurity. Basically, if you look at the URL, it's an obscure URL with a weird little ID number at the end that no one will guess, and Google's not going to, like, archive it, or they're not going to crawl it at all. So... No. I don't know that that's been fully vetted, to be honest, but at the same time, they are giving the speech in front of the whole class to begin with. And the students are actually, if, I guess what we are considering this obscure security good enough for this situation because there really isn't any private data there. They're giving this speech publicly. That's true. Yes. Yep, as many times as you want. Yes. If she wanted to do her own annotation, she could, separate from anyone else, and the only one to know the URL would be the student.
And that would perhaps address
right. Yes, they could structure it that way. She's chosen not to. Yes. Right. These are really great questions. Thank you. All right, let's just make one here quickly. ant.umn.edu. UMN as in University of Minnesota, umn.edu. Click on it to start. All you need to do is add a title. I can't see what I'm typing, so I'll just an email address and a URL of a video. And the URL of the video, it needs to be an FLV file. Or it could be a QuickTime movie, but only if it's compressed in H.264. That's it. And that's, again, not our limitation, but that is a limitation of the Flash player that we're using. And I think that's going to only get better. If you want to go here and play with it, just leave what's in here. There's a sample that FLV in there. That's just a local file that you can just, if you just want to play with it and see what it does.
Hi, welcome to VideoAnt. My name is Pete McCauley. I am a staff member with the Dean's Office of Education and Human Development.
Pete's our videographer who did a demo here.
I'm here to give you a bit of a guided tour.
Especially for something with only one button. But
interface at any time that you want. But first, let me tell you a little bit about VideoAnt.
So what you do when you in any video is any time in the timeline, and again, you can scrub this timeline to anywhere you want and grab the playhead, move it around, and watch Pete jump around. And then you can just say, add a marker to the timeline, click on that, it opens
you receive two URLs in your email inbox. One is...
I'm going to pause that. You can just type whatever you want. I'm not going to really do anything here. Keep playing it.
The link to a page that is using the sample video that we have.
And so, well, here, I'll just make another one. I'm not going to type any comments in it. I'll just save it for the sake of speed. Now, you can manipulate this if you want to. You can grab the pins. If I could see it, I can grab it. There, did I get it? Not quite. There we go. Okay, I can grab it over there. You watch it flips itself around up on top. It'll reorder itself, gives itself the correct time. Again, you click on these on the annotation, it jumps to that point in the video, or if you click on the pin itself, it'll jump again, the same thing. That's pretty much it. Now, there are three different versions of this that get created. Go ahead, while I'm looking for something. Who had a question? Yeah. Okay, here's my email. All right, here's Thunderbird. Here's the email I get. Ugh. I'm sorry if you can't see this. It just says, you created a video and it gives you three links, basically, and an email address for support if you need it. And the three links do just slightly different things. One of them links to a version of the video, the annotated video, that has no annotation button in it. In other words, you can't be edited. It's just a watch only. So you see that button, the big button's missing.
University of Minnesota.
Okay.
I'm here to give you a bit of a guided tour from right here within the VideoAnt interface. So feel free to click around the interface.
All right. Goodbye, Pete. The next one will give you, next one's a link to the exact same thing that we saw before. I won't click on that, but basically one that you can edit. So what Jill does is she sends that second link, the one that is editable, she'll send that then to the students who need to either do their own reviews or the peer reviews. And they click on that and they go in. Yep. Screen readers won't work very well. The reason being is because it's flash and we haven't dealt with that. However, the way we've built it so that in the future, hopefully we can deal with that. And the way Brad built it, he's the technical genius here, is basically an XML backend. So all the data is in an XML file. If Brad were here, he'd be able to type in the URL for any video. It's just a different file, and it would pull up an XML file of all the text. So we're hoping is that others who like this and want to expand on it can build something into it that is screen readable using that XML that just pulls that in and deals with it. But right now, we don't have it.
So, about the website, what is the plan for making
it? That's a good question. And the original intent was just to open it up and give the thing away. However, lawyers have gotten involved. Sorry. As has Hardeen, who I think is interested, and being in the budget crisis we're in, they're thinking that they can make money out of it. I'm not saying I have no idea. I'm not entrepreneurial enough to know, I guess. But what we have done, I've written this into several grants, teacher education grants, things like that, trying to get some funding to further some development there. The American Distance Education Consortium, if anyone's familiar with them, we're talking with them right now because they're interested in partnering with us on it. I don't know what that means, but partnering with us in development of it. They have lots of different uses they see that are possible. Yes? I go back and forth on that because I see those possibilities like you're talking about. That sounds really cool. The simplicity of it is what makes everyone look at it and go, oh my gosh, I could use it for this. I had the person, the director of space management at the university says, I could give tours of buildings with this. Annotate, show a video of someone walking through the classrooms, through the building, and they enter a classroom and all the data for the classroom shows up. It's got whatever, how many seats it has and how many. And I've got the vice provost who wants to use it for faculty reviews, record a faculty member in their class and I don't think that'll ever happen, but the simplicity. I think we're going to keep it simple for lots of different reasons. Probably the biggest one is we don't have the time to make it any more than it is. There are lots of other cool things going on out there, however, and I think we may just stay where we're at and watch to see what develops above us and in those cooler zones, so to speak. How much time we got there, Will? 20 minutes? Okay, all right. I wanted one thing that Brad built into this just this last summer was the ability to use YouTube videos. And so because just, again, it's a process thing. How can we make this as easy as possible? People upload videos to YouTube all the time. It still isn't like... still takes work, still takes some work on their part, but we thought this might be somewhere. Everyone's not going to have this media mill that we have available, people outside the university and so on. So there's a however here. So I found a YouTube video. All right, just as an example. It's the University of Minnesota's marching band playing the browser. Until 3 days ago or so, I could simply take... Whoops, sorry. Just kidding, I have two screens here. I shouldn't have extended my desktop, I guess. There we go. Okay, so there's a YouTube video that someone uploaded. I have no idea who. And until a couple days ago, I could... just copy the URL up here, copy it, and paste it into the video ant where it asked me for the URL. It would recognize that it's a YouTube video, and it would strip out just the video, not the YouTube overlays, not the anything else. A few days ago, apparently YouTube changed this something. And so here's what I did. You can still use it. It just takes more steps, unfortunately, which is what we're trying to avoid in this whole thing. But if just for your information, if there's something you want to go and use, there are places on the web that allow you to do exactly, to strip videos out of the YouTube. I want to say right now, I have no idea whether this violates any kind of use policies by YouTube. I would guess it does, but I don't know. And I don't want to know. No. But someone, maybe me, maybe someone else, used this today, and apparently KeepVid, there we go. There are lots of different services like this. This one apparently is already caught up to YouTube's changes. And all you do is put in that same URL right here in this field, and a little window will pop up saying you want to save this file. You just have to add an FLV extension onto it, put it on the web somewhere, and you can use it in VideoAnt. So it's exactly what I did. I uploaded it to the web. Here's a kind of a web directory. Here's the marching band. Put it into VideoAnt. Oops, it's already done. So I did this before the presentation. I wasn't sure how the networking would work here, so added a few annotations. And it works just fine, but there are some limitations. The quality of the video compression matters. Flash Video has keyframes every so often, and we compress ours to be as many keyframes as possible because that is where the video can kind of jump to. YouTube uses a keyframe every 10 seconds. So that's as accurate as you're going to get, unfortunately, with your annotations. You can put the annotations anywhere you want, but the video, when you jump, will only go to, there's 40 seconds, 50 seconds, 10 seconds, and so on. So there is that limitation there, unfortunately, but it's something, at least. I certainly understand why YouTube would need to do that. I want to point out one other thing. I didn't mention what the third link in the email does. The first one, again, links to a version that you don't edit, that you can't edit. The second one is one that, again, you can edit, do whatever you want with it. The third one is something that Brad just finished 2 days ago. And it's an embedded version. So it's something that you can just embed on a page somewhere. And so I embedded it in this Moodle site. Of course, it's the marching band. One bug in this one he finished 2 days ago is that it doesn't scroll down as it highlights the next one. There we go. But it does highlight it. Okay. So we thought that was an important next step. That's something I asked him to do, because then you can put it in a context, in some context that's important, a course site, for instance, like this. And I think that's going to be a popular one. Now, this you cannot edit on this one, not right now at least. That would be a little bit challenging, but the footprint kind of limits you a little bit. But so, other questions? Yes. Trying to remember where Brad was at with that, because I did ask him about that one. Yes, because there is a functionality within Flash, I believe, to read HTML. So it should be possible. Anything you can do in that, you should be able to do. Whether he chooses to implement that on his list of priorities, I don't know. But if, by the way, you have suggestions, or if you have questions, or if you have, if we try to use it and you, you know, he can't. He's one person, has lots of projects, but he's always happy to answer emails. And I'll give it to you at the end here. But it's easy to remember. It's just ant@umn.edu. He answers to that one. There you go. Nope. This video is on YouTube. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's not on YouTube. It's where I copied it. Just the data does. The XML file is generated dynamically as it plays. But, right, the video doesn't get copied. It stays wherever it is on the web. Right. Like I said, I don't want to get into the business of storing videos for anything. So, right. Oh, that's an HTML block. And, oh, let me just show you. How I did that. The third link will not link you to a video, but it'll link you to an embed some embed code, if that makes sense. So if I click, here's the third link, click, and it gives you the embed code right there. So I just made an HTML block in Moodle, pasted that in there, and it was done. So, yes, sir? Only downloadable video, I believe. Now, I don't know if you can you stream FLVs? I don't. Yeah, you can, can't you? You know, we have a Flash Media Server. We should try that. I don't know. I would assume that you can't, but I don't know why. Just because we've never tried it. That's a good question.
And the other was, are you familiar with other video annotation tools, like the Media Matrix from NC State or Project Guide in Northwestern? And how would you compare this?
Well, I am somewhat familiar with some of them. When we started, the only one I was familiar with was the one at Stanford, was Roy P's Diver, thank you. And that was made, I think, for teacher education specifically, and has lots of functionality specific to that. Really cool. But we were, yes. Fiddler, yep.
My point of view, my teaching video.
Cool.
Orion, which is out at University of York. So the Carnegie site is a really good set of tools.
Cool, thank you. That's great. I'll check that out, yes.
There's also Hot Lecture Bunny Scribe.
I haven't heard of that one. Transcription, gotcha. Sounds useful. There are lots of tools that have popped up since we first started this, and it was probably 2 years ago. And again, at the time, we only knew of a couple, a Diver being one of them. Since then, I've lost track. There have been so many. I swear every couple of weeks someone emails me and says, hey, you should see this one or you should see that one. And they're all, so I don't even know how to explain how this fits in. I know what we use it for. The other ones are usually made for something pretty specific, I should say. Unless it's a commercial product, which then they keep it pretty general because they're wanting as big audiences they can get. And there are a lot of commercial ones out there now too, quite a few of them. So I'm not sure how to answer the question about how it fits. I know how it fits for us. But yes, simplicity is it, I guess. So I saw a couple other hands, I thought. ant.umn.edu. Oh, that one's the Stanford.
Volume representation, MRT at CarnegieFoundation.org.
Did you have another example besides the speech class?
I don't, not one that's pre-annotated. We had to get approvals from the people using it to present it here today, and those are the only ones we got. I had three of those. I didn't show all of them, but they're all pretty much just speech classes. The other things, I guess, that it's been used for are really kind of, people have tried to use it for discussions, discussion board kind of thing. It works okay for that, and that's actually kind of the intended use. I mean, the original intended use was to make it kind of a discussion board. One of the features that Brad had on there that he on his list of things to do was threading the discussions so that you could comment on things. Right now, if you do that, I mean, you just basically, there'll be comments, and they'll all be at 44 seconds, and you'll kind of see them all at once. And they're not really related then. It's hard to tell that they're related to each other. You're replying to somebody else. So if there was a feature that we would change or add, it might be that one, which would add some functionality to what other people are doing, because people are trying to use it to kind of build community, kind of that thing that everyone's trying to do nowadays. And I'm not sure it's the best tool for that. Right now, its strength is really in performance assessment. Like Jill did. Jill's use is perfect. It's beautiful. She's really changed what she's done in her class. So. Pardon? Yes, you could now. Yes, right. That's true. You could. Yep. Yeah, I forgot about that. That's true. You can. So. I think that's, unless there are other questions at all, again, I don't know if I have that much because it's such a simple tool, and you can go play with it yourselves and rather than listen to me. So, yes? The database behind it is a MySQL, yep, and it's a PHP scripting. Very, very simple. There's so little data being passed back and forth here. It's the URL, the video. The player itself handles all the URL then and deals with that and pulls it in. And the annotations themselves, again, are tiny little things. So very little load, and that's why we're happy to just, again, I don't know what the future of this as far as giving it away. I'd love to do that. I'd love to have other people play with it and build on it and all of that. We'll see where that goes. We'll see. I'll fight the good fight here. But you're, in the meantime, certainly welcome to use it on our site as much as you want. So. Okay. Thank you.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Stream multi-format audio and video to PCs and mobile devices with Helix Server from Real. Information at realnetworks.com.